Ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adoita Gadadha Srivastari Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai, Mathura Dhamma ki jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesis and Nivadi Paskatyade Satarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Samsajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. July 10th, 2012, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Maharaj Parikit, cursed by a Brahmin boy, text 33. Aho Adharma Palanam. Pivnam Bali Bhujam Miva. Swamin Yagam Yadashanam. Dwarapanam Shunam Miva. Aho. Just look at our Dharmaha, irreligion. Palanam of the rulers, Pivnam of one who is brought up, Balibhujam like the crows, Eva like Swamini unto the master, Agam, sin, yet, what is, Dashanam, of the servants, Dwarapanam, keeping watch at the door, Shunam of the dogs, Eva, like Eva, like translation. The Brahmana's son Sringi said, "Oh, just look at the sins of the rulers, who, like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetrate sins against their masters, contrary to the principles governing servants." Well, Interesting. Maharaj Parikit was thinking, how dare my subordinate not respond to me, not serve me? And Sringi's thinking, how dare my subordinate insult my father? So this is the essential disease, right? That I'm superior to everyone and everyone is meant to serve me. Purport. The Brahmanas are considered to be the head and brains of the social body, and the Kshatriyas are considered to be the arms of the social body. The arms are required to protect the body from all harm, but the arms must act according to the directions of the head and brain. That is a natural arrangement made by the Supreme Order, for it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that four orders or castes, namely the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, are set up according to quality and work done by them. Naturally, the son of a Brahmana has a good chance. So Prabhupada's making a point, the first point he's making here, is that the Brahmanas are the head, that the Kshatriyas are subordinate to the Brahmanas. So this conception of Sringi, that Maharaj Parikit should have treated his father as a superior, is correct. Okay, next point. Going on with the purport. Naturally, the son of a Brahmana has a good chance to become a Brahmana by the direction of his qualified father, as a son of a medical practitioner has a very good chance to become a qualified medical practitioner. So the caste system is quite scientific. The son must take advantage of the father's qualification and thus become a Brahmana or medical practitioner and not otherwise. Without being qualified, one cannot become a Brahmana or medical practitioner, and that is the verdict of all scriptures and social orders. So here Prabhupada's making the point that there's some scientific value to a caste system that has birth as one of its considerations. And we'll discuss that more a little later. But he's saying that birth is not everything, and he gives the example of a doctor. And he says that the son of a doctor has a good chance to become a doctor, but he also has to become personally qualified. And we see, in fact, there are many families where children take up the occupations of their parents generation after generation. I mean, I'm here with my son, who makes his living as a computer programmer, or as they call it now, a software engineer. And that was my husband's profession. So now that was not his father's profession. But interestingly enough, my other son, who's also a very good computer programmer and can also work very well with hardware like his father, is working in the food business, which is what my father did, and what also both his paternal and maternal grandfathers were managers and leaders, administrators in food businesses. So, and interestingly enough, my father was the manager in a religious food business, and my son is selling prasadam. So there's something like that. I mean, that's not uncommon. Or, you know, I've worked as a teacher, and my daughter also has worked as a teacher. So this is quite common that children, not necessarily, but possibly, or, you know, take up the profession of their parents, but they also have to become qualified. It's not that they take up the profession of their parents just by sleeping on the couch in front of the television. Okay, going on with the purport. Here in Sringi, a qualified son of a great Brahmana, so Prabhupada calls him qualified, attain the required brahminical power both by birth and by training. So, both things. He had birth and training. But he was lacking in culture because he was an experienced boy. So Prabhupada's talking about needing three things, at least to become a Brahmana. Training and culture, with birth being a great help. By the influence of Kali, this is going on with the purport, by the influence of Kali, the son of a Brahmana became puffed up with brahminical power and thus wrongly compared Maharaj Parikit to crows and watchdogs. So this was evidence of his lack of culture. Going on, the king is certainly the watchdog of the state in the sense that he keeps vigilant eyes over the border of the state for his protection and defense, but to address him as a watchdog is a sign of a less cultured boy. Thus, the downfall of the brahminical powers began as they gave importance to birthright without culture. The downfall of the Brahmin caste began in the age of Kali, and since Brahmanas are the heads of the social order, all other orders of society also began to deteriorate. This beginning of brahminical deterioration was highly deplored by the father of Sringi, as we will find. Aho adharma palanam pivnam bali bujam iva swamin yagam yadashanam dwaram panam shunam iva. The Brahmin's son Sringi said, "Oh, just look at the sins of the rulers who, like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetrate sins against their masters contrary to the principles governing servants." So that's... And we see that both people had this mood. Both Sringi and Maharaj Bricket had this mood of being offended by a subordinate. This is not unnatural. All of us belong to the spiritual world. We're originally residents of the Vaikuntha worlds. That's our home. That's our position. And there, as described in the third canto, there is great mutual respect and appreciation for everyone. So it's the atmosphere in which we normally exist, an atmosphere of great mutual appreciation and respect. It's like having, we need air. And in this material world, it's the opposite, because ironically, here everyone is looking for respect for themselves, and therefore they're not giving it to others, and therefore nobody gets it. In the spiritual atmosphere, everyone is giving respect to everyone, so everybody naturally has respect. No one has to look for it for themselves. In fact, no one is thinking about it for themselves. Just like a rich person's son doesn't worry about whether or not they're going to have food on the table. So those in spiritual consciousness never think about getting respect. It's automatically there. But in material consciousness, one is very concerned with getting respect. And one of the main causes of our anger is when we feel that we've been treated with a lack of respect. And we feel that people haven't taken our position into account, or haven't taken our situation into account. They don't really understand us. They're not being considerate and respectful of us. So I see in my own life and in the lives of people I deal with, what definitely makes us one of the most disturbed is when people treat us without understanding our situation and without giving us respect. Therefore, in entering into spiritual life, one must learn to enter into the spiritual mood of giving all respect to others. And this giving respect to others, we could say, is the essence of culture. So Srila Prabhupada's saying here that the problem with Sringi is that he didn't have culture. Now, Srila Prabhupada is saying that the reason Sringi didn't have culture is he was young. He was just a boy, maybe like 12 years old. So if you're around children, you notice that children generally are not naturally cultured. I was reading an article about whether or not one can determine a psychopath or a sociopath when they're a child. And they said that one of the difficulties with doing so is that two of the hallmarks of the sociopath or psychopath is narcissism. And what was the other one? Being self-absorbed.
Lack of compassion.
I can't remember the other one. Oh my. Anyway, the main hallmarks of such a person is the standard of childhood. That most children are very self-absorbed. They don't really understand other people's point of view. That children are just like that by nature. Therefore, they have to have sufficient training in culture. So obviously, this boy Sringi had gotten training in Brahminical powers, but he hadn't had sufficient training in culture. It takes a long time to train somebody in culture, to civilize somebody. You know, a tiny human child, all they think about is their own needs. They have no awareness of anyone else's needs. And frankly, even when children are 10 or 12, like Sringi was, I think you're probably around 12, they're... mentality tends to be very self-centered. So culture is essential, and we could say the essence of culture, that as I understand it, that Srila Prabhupada is talking about here, is respect and consideration and appreciation for others. And the word culture can be used in many different ways, and I think it can be great confusion for us. You know, the word culture can simply mean how a particular group of people define meaning in relationships. Just like in India, it's considered cultured to serve your food, your guests food that they said they didn't want. And in America, that would be considered very uncultured. If a guest comes to your house in America and you say, would you like some more rice? And they say, no, thank you, and you put it on their plate anyway, they would consider that a breach of culture. Whereas in India, if they say, they don't even say, would you like more rice? They just simply put it on your plate. And that's considered cultured. So we can talk about culture in that way. You know, what a person's private, how much private space a person has. Again, in some cultures, people keep a further distance than in other cultures. And if you go too close to somebody in one culture, they'll think you're rude. Whereas if you stay away from that person in another culture, they'll think that you're rude. Whether you look people in the eye, you know, all these sort of things. How you dress in different situations. All these things can be considered part of culture. What means what? Which is why, statistically, cross-cultural marriages are quite difficult. And which is also why, in the Shastra, it talks about marrying people of the same varna. Each varna also has its own kind of culture. So we can mean culture like that. The particular manifestations of the way that people show respect and consideration for each other, the way they show the particular form in which their values manifest. And we can, which changes from one group of people to the other. I mean, even in a Vedic society, even when we talk about Vedic culture, we should understand that each varna has its own subculture. I mean, here in America, we have many, many subcultures, primarily because people come to America from all parts of the world. But even in a more homogeneous place, such as Japan or Poland, there are still subcultures. I read an interesting article years ago about a very wealthy woman who married a man from a poor background, and she was talking about the difference in culture. She made the point, she said, poor people at a meal will ask each other, did you get enough? Middle class people will ask, was it good? And rich people will ask, did you find the display tasteful? So there's different cultures, even within what we think of as one culture, as one country or one ethnicity. And similarly, in Vedic society, the culture among the Brahmanas between themselves was quite different than that between the Kshatriyas, or that between the Vaishyas, or that between the Shudras. So they had their own inner Varna culture, and then they had their cultures of how they dealt with each other, which is what we're dealing with here, how the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas would interact with each other. So we find that studies have shown that there are universal moral principles of purity, authority, of fairness, community, and harm. That every human culture values those five things. But how that's manifested is going to change from one group of people to another. How you show that you're loyal to your community and you support your community. How you show respect for authority, which are the things that we're looking at here. That's going to be very different from one group of people to the other. But this concept of showing respect, this concept of appreciation, can also be considered culture. So wherever you go, if someone says, oh, that's a cultured person, or that's an uncultured person, what they mean is, this is a person who, first of all, has an attitude and a basis of respect and appreciation and consideration. And second of all, they mean somebody who shows those things according to the behaviors that are accepted in that particular group of people. So here we see that Sringi is acting inappropriately. We have a funny situation here where, on the one hand, the Brahmanas are the authorities for everyone, including the Kshatriyas, as Prabhupada makes in the first point. And on the other hand, the king is the authority for everyone, including the Brahmanas. That even the Brahmanas are supposed to respect the king. They're supposed to respect the ruler, even though they're Brahmanas. And even though they're his authority, they're still supposed to treat him with respect. Even in modern government, so the cabinet ministers of the president, they still have to say Mr. President, although in one sense they can tell him what to do. So I don't want to look at the particulars of individual cultures, although I do want to make the point that we should be extremely careful in our modern world where each of us interact with people from various cultures, that we do not interpret others as being cultured or uncultured according to our own scale. Because, again, the manifestation of respect in one place can be exactly the opposite of the manifestation of respect in another place. One second. So that one should be careful. When I go to some parts of the world, I just say to people, I'm not very cultured. You know, because I realize that they're not going to see me as coming from a different culture. They're going to see me simply as uncultured. You know, when the person just plops the rice on your plate, are you going to say, oh, they're showing me respect in an Indian way? Or are you going to just say, oh, they're disrespectful? So I realize that in many parts of the world, my own way of showing respect will be seen as disrespectful. The thing I run into the most, being raised in America and particularly in New York City, is that my culture was one where you showed respect to people by speaking the truth and saying what you mean and meaning what you say. And there's many parts of the world where the opposite is true, especially when I go to New Zealand or United Kingdom or India, where in those countries the way you show respect is by not saying what you mean. And one problem that I have is that I'll say what I mean, and people in those places will assume that I'm not saying what I mean, and so they actually understand something different than what I intended. So I don't want to talk about that sort of sociological kind of culture, although it's something, if we want to get along in our very small world, and if we're part of an international society of Vaishnavas, you know, Prabhupada called it ISKCON, the International Society, and boy, is it international. You know, you can go to many groups of ISKCON devotees where everybody in the room is from a different country. So that does pose some challenges to us when we decide, is this person cultured or is this person not cultured? But I want to look at kind of the underlying, today I want to focus at the underlying essence of culture, which is again how to show respect, and particularly here in this pastime, how to show power for this particular verse and purport, because Sringi is about to misuse his power. Prabhupada talks of here about how he has brahminical power. So when do we use our power? All of us have some power. How do we use our power? How do we use the power that we have with respect and etiquette? At what time, with what people do we use our power? So the first point is thoughtfulness before action. So Sringi's not being very thoughtful. Parikit just reacted, and Sringi is just reacting. By the way, in this section of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada calls the behavior of each of them silly. He calls it tit for tat, and he calls it silly, both on the part of Parikit and on the part of Sringi. So both of these people, they're just reacting without really thinking first. Now, Maharaj Parikit starts thinking later. Maybe the sage was really in trance, maybe I made a mistake, etc., etc. Now, Sringi only started thinking when his father came out of the trance and talked to him. He wasn't mature enough to start really thinking on his own. And therefore, one also has to have some knowledge of one's own position. Now, that's a very difficult thing to do. Most children don't realize that they're not acting properly because they're children. It's quite interesting, you know, being here around a bunch of children. So I see every day how the children will act without culture. And when you tell them, this is the way you need to act, their tendency is to say, I didn't do anything wrong. Even though it's obvious to everybody else. So this tendency is very active in each of us, this defending ourselves. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm already cultured. I'm already acting in the right way. So part of being cultured is to know one's own position, to know oneself. This is, of course, part of humility, which is the essence of showing respect to others. They're all intertwined. To have some awareness, these are my faults, these are my uncultured tendencies, these are the ways in which I'm going to tend to behave such that other people will be offended, and to be on guard against them. Not just to immediately do something or say something, especially if we have a lot of power. In those days, the brahmanas had so much power that they could just say, a snake bird will bite you. Even making up a creature. You know, I'm going to create a creature. I suppose that's something like a dragon. You know, just I could even create a creature that would kill you, and then it would actually happen. That's how much power they had. But whatever power we have, the more that we have power in a particular situation, the more we should be circumvent about how to use it. Now, I don't think it's so much the talk today, but when I was growing up, we were in the middle of the Cold War between America and Russia, and we seemed to be constantly on the brink of nuclear war. And I remember a movie that I saw in summer camp when I was a kid called Failsafe, how due to some computer glitch, the Americans ended up bombing Moscow. And we were always terrified like that. We were always terrified that the government would misuse their power and push the button that would start a thermonuclear war. So the more power you have, the more you have to be careful. The more you have to have some thoughtfulness. Know your own weaknesses, and then consult with others. So Sringi should have consulted with his father first, not afterwards. Part of culture is knowing that there's very, 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 very few times when immediate, urgent action is needed. You know, we often think, I have to do this right now. I have to take action right now, especially when we've been offended. Of course, we often don't even recognize that what's precipitating us to action is a sense of our own being offended. You know, we think, oh, this is some righteous thing. Just like Sringi, he's thinking, I'm acting on principle. I'm acting on moral principle. But he's not. He's acting on a sense of being personally offended. So to have the thoughtfulness to say, okay, the problem is I feel personally offended. That I'm needing respect and consideration and appreciation and understanding. That's very hard to admit that to ourselves, by the way. We all want to pretend that we don't need those things or we don't want those things. I would say especially as devotees, but I don't think so. I think in general, people are very hesitant to say, hey, I really need, not just I want, I really need respect and consideration and appreciation. And when I don't get them, then I tend to try to use my power without thinking in order to get them. Instead, we make up some story about justice and fairness and principles and so forth, when that's not what's happening at all. It's a very personal thing based on our ego. So to be able to step back and say, wait a minute, my problem in this situation is really about myself, really about wanting respect. And how can I act as a person of culture? How can I act as if I were a resident of the spiritual world? You know, to consult with others, to take some time to consult with the Shastra. How do I act in this situation? And amazingly enough, to try to give respect to others, to try to see others from their point of view, instead of being so stuck in, well, this other is not seeing me from my point of view. What about my seeing them from them, from their point of view? Why not give to others what I would like to get for myself? Because when we actually do that, when we really respect others and really have, not just on a superficial level as far as the niceties of the ways in which we were raised, however we think is the way to do that, but when we have deep respect and consideration and appreciation for others, then Krishna is pleased. Krishna reciprocates with our humility, and then we experience that we're getting all the respect and consideration and understanding we need from Krishna. And therefore, whether we get it from the other person or not becomes not as important. I wouldn't say that we don't care at all. Like Judd Bharat, after Maharaj Rahugana insulted him, it said he felt some waves of dissatisfaction in his mind, which he did not act on. And even Lord Varaha, when Hiranyaka insulted him, he was pained in the heart. But he made sure he took care of the earth planet before he dealt with Hiranyaksha. So the devotees may feel some mental disturbance at being treated with a lack of respect. But because they're getting their respect and their understanding from Krishna, they're able to act with ultimate culture in all circumstances. They don't lose their culture. A materialistic person is not able to tolerate a certain limit of disrespect and inconsiderateness and will lose their culture. And this is not just a matter of brute control over yourself, but it's really a matter of deep inner satisfaction. So this culture of respect, this culture of consideration, which is part of what I understand when Prabhupada talks about brahminical culture. And it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada uses the word brahminical culture to refer to Vedic society as a whole. That even though the Shudras have their own particular cultural manifestations, as do the Vaishyas and as do the Kshatriyas, when they're governed by proper brahmanas, then there's a general mood of respect and consideration and appreciation. And, you know, that's what we are all looking for. We're looking for the spiritual world. You know, the other day some devotees took me to a program at another spiritual group, and they were talking at length about how this group showed a lot of care and appreciation for each other. They were very impressed by that. They were saying, why do they show more than we do? Well, that's what we're looking for. For example, among the Amish, they're known for being caring to each other, for helping each other, for being there for each other, for respecting each other. And therefore, even though their spiritual philosophy is not very intellectually satisfying, at least from my perspective, they preach that the earth is flat because the Bible talks about the four corners of the earth, for example. And even though their lifestyle is very difficult, you know, they don't use any modern machinery. Every Amish girl has to learn how to cook for 150 people because they take turns having their worship services in their homes. They don't believe in having any kind of a separate church. They do a lot of hard physical labor. Still, they keep 75% of their children. 75% of their children stay within their communities. And one of the main reasons the sociologists give is that they have a very strong culture of respect. So this is the essence of culture. And not only material culture, but spiritual culture. In fact, the verse that exemplifies this culture, Trinadapi Sunichena, Taror Iva Sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya Siddhahari. This verse is the key to entering into the higher stages of bhakti. In Bhajana Rahasya, Bhakti Vinod Thakur equates this verse with entering into nishta, after which Prabhupada says, the hard struggle with determination is over and everything in spiritual life happens automatically. So this respect, consideration, and appreciation for others without being dependent on receiving it from other jivas in return, without having my behavior and my mood determined by whether or not and how other people reciprocate with me in that way, by getting my reciprocation from Krishna. That is the key to entering into the higher stages of bhakti that we all desire, where we have a taste for the name, where we're attached to Krishna, where we're experiencing this spiritual ecstasy and realization described in the Shastra. So it's not just a question of smooth interaction between humans, but a question of entering into our eternal abode. And here, this having this sort of culture is more important, Prabhupada says, than having good training and having power. That Sringi, Prabhupada says here, was a qualified brahmana. But yet, because he hadn't imbibed this respect, eventually everything tumbled. Because when the brahmanas stopped giving out this culture of respect, consideration, appreciation, the lower social orders also become contaminated. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish a culture of Brahmins, a society of Brahmanas, who could set a different example for society. Therefore, it's not just a matter of me personally, that I should develop this culture of Trinadapi Sunichena for my own advancement, but also that we need to develop this culture if we want to really lead the world. It's not just a matter of giving out a book, which is, of course, very important, but it's also a matter of demonstrating the culture. Now, having said this, I will admit that it's extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult for a conditioned soul. Prabhupada says it's a hard struggle with determination to come to the third verse of the Shikshastaka, especially in Kali Yuga. For a conditioned soul on the earth planet in Kali Yuga, it seems like climbing Mount Everest. But some very simple steps, when I get upset, when I get angry, to stop and be honest. Am I angry because I'm being treated with a lack of respect or a lack of consideration or a lack of appreciation? Take away the concept that there's some higher principle at work here. And if one can see that, because that is often the case, not always, but often, and then say, okay, obviously I need those things, I'm a soul, but do I need to get those things from this person? Maybe I can show some respect, consideration, and appreciation for this person and this person's situation and this person's point of view. And ask Krishna to please take care of me, and to take the time, maybe consult with others, not do some, exactly in Srila Prabhupada's words, silly tit-for-tat, but rather treat others as I would like to be treated. And I know, at least in my life, I get plenty of opportunities to practice this. I get plenty of situations that allow me to practice, am I going to have some real culture? I mean, just yesterday I had somebody who I'm working with deal with me with a lack of consideration for my own time and my own energy. And it was very difficult. The tendency is to say back to the other person, hey, you have to respect me. What about you? You know. And then whoever has the greater power, so-called, wins. Just like here, Maharaj Parikit was able to put on a dead snake, but Sringi was able to curse to death, being a Brahmana. Of course, Maharaj Parikit, being a Vaishnava, could have also counteracted that. But being a Vaishnava, he chose not to do so. So to make a choice, I am not going to do a silly tit for tat. I'm not going to say, well, what about you? Well, you're this and you're that. You should have this, you should have that. That's so common. Someone attacks us, or sometimes it isn't us, it's somebody else. Oh, I'm acting on principle. Really? Take the time. Because here, Sringi wasn't attacked, his father was attacked. So he could even more justify it by saying, I'm acting on principle. It's my duty to defend my father. Yes, certainly. But he still wasn't cultured. Sringi got into the same mood that he was condemning. So he'd seen something in Maharaj Parikit, he condemned it, and then he went and did the same thing himself. Which is why Dharma the Bull says that one who names the perpetrator is just as guilty. One who gets in this mood, this person is the perpetrator. Then he also falls into the same mentality. So being cultured is perhaps a relatively easy thing to do when it comes to the superficial manifestations of our particular community in which we've been trained, but it's a very difficult thing to do when it comes to the level of the heart. And when the heart is not really in culture, then it shows up sometimes in our behavior. It shows up sometimes in our words, body, mind, and words. So therefore, if we really want to become cultured, we have to become cultured on the level of the mind and the heart. Okay, I will stop here. I can't go on too long today, so if there's any questions or comments or whatever, we can take that now.
I really liked the class. I thought it was great. Culture, we're definitely undercultured in the West, in America. But one thing you said about India, which I've spent a little time lately in, they don't appreciate speaking the truth. And you're referencing, you know, having a background on the East Coast and, you know, how being straightforward is appreciated. That's very American, you know, to speak your mind.
Yes.
It's European to be kind of diplomatic.
Correct.
You know, say one thing and be thinking another.
Correct.
And there are other cultures like that. And India, it reminded me of this, the truth should be spoken pleasingly. I've heard this in India. So I looked up while you were giving the class, I was looking up what Prabhupada said in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 4th and 5th verse, purport. He says, satyam, truthfulness, means that the facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. Facts should not be misrepresented. According to social conventions, it is said that one can speak the truth only when it is palatable to others. But that is not truthfulness. The truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. If a man is a thief, and if people are warned that he is a thief, that is the truth. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. Truthfulness demands that the facts be presented as they are for the benefit of others. That is the definition of truth. So then from the Hindu side, I noticed that there's a verse that they quote from the Ramayana, and Sringi's not following this. Satyam bruyat priyam hitam. So priyam means speech that does not hurt others. Hitam is something that is said for the good or betterment of others. One should be careful of speaking the truth, but not hurting others. Speak the truth in such a way that it should be pleasing to others in a loving manner, and secondly, it should be spoken for the betterment of others. So Srila Prabhupada, he crossed this line many times, but it was always coming from a place of compassion to benefit others, to cut through the ignorance and defenses of both Indians and Westerners who were averse to Krishna consciousness. So one of the definitions of a sadhu, and I think they're exempt from the social convention, is they cut. That's one of the definitions of a sadhu, is they cut away the unwanted things. So I just thought I'd add that.
That's very wonderful. Thank you. We could talk about this for quite a long time. I've looked at the austerities of speech and seen that the main one is beneficial. You know, are we doing things to help others? I would still make the point that in every culture of the world, people believe that they're following that, but how they follow it is somewhat different. Exactly like we could say that you should receive guests nicely, but what does that mean specifically changes from one group of people to another. So the way that Australians receive a guest, and the way that people in Kerala receive a guest, and the way that people in Germany receive a guest is somewhat different. And sometimes those external manifestations are opposite. So in cultures where tactfulness is valued over truthfulness, they consider that it's very rude and unbeneficial to be blunt. You have to speak, you know, they put tactfulness above truthfulness. Other cultures put truthfulness above tactfulness. I've also seen that on an individual basis, some individuals are much more comfortable being tactful, and some individuals are much more comfortable being truthful, even in the same culture. And that's coming to personality style. My own suggestion for that is you're not going to change your personality style, nor are we going to change our individual manifestations of cultural upbringing. I've had some good friends who were raised in America who've hardly been back to the States. They're mostly in Europe or other, or India, and they've told me they've given up their American cultural values of being more truthful than tactful, but they haven't. And it's often quite amusing when people say they've given up the culture that they've been raised in, or they've been given up their personality style, because I don't think that that's possible completely. It may be possible to some extent. But each has their value. There's a time when tactfulness is more beneficial, and there's a time when blunt truthfulness is more beneficial. And the real point there is beneficial. And we see that Prabhupada was able to use both, that sometimes Srila Prabhupada was extremely indirect and tactful with people. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada was not cutting with people. And other times he was extremely cutting with people. He really knew how to employ both. Most of us tend to be much better at one than the other. So most people I know, they're either much, much better at being diplomatic and tactful, and some people are much, much better at being truthful and cutting. And being able to know when to use each. And if I'm really bad at one of those, then let someone else handle that situation. If I'm normally a very tactful, diplomatic person, and a situation requires blunt truthfulness, let me get someone else to do the job. And if I'm normally a very blunt person, and a situation requires diplomacy, then let someone else do the job. And especially that's true if you're very extreme of one type or another. And one of my very, very good friends is blunt and truthful to the extreme, and it causes him a lot of problems. And I have another very good friend, both of them devotees, who's diplomatic to the extreme, and it causes him a lot of problems. So to be honest with oneself, you know, what is my general tendency? I mean, myself personally, Urmila, you know, I'm very blunt, both by personality style and by upbringing. And therefore, there are certain things that I just shouldn't get involved with at all. that there are certain times, you know, the doctors don't always cut. So sometimes a surgeon cuts, and sometimes a surgeon just gives medicine, and sometimes a surgeon just gives kind words. So to know what's required, to know, to be able to shift my own way of being, and maybe to also engage somebody else, to say it's not that I'm the right person for everything. All right, I need to stop now today. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and thank you for your comments. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.